came in peace for all mankind. Welcome back to the NASA Vending Machine, where we talk about episodes of For All Mankind on Apple TV+. I'm Jason Snell, and with me, as always, is Dan Morin. Dan, stop being with me always. Give me some alone time.
Well, it's hard when you're in space and on Mars. Like, you can't really get a lot of personal time.
You can't. Well, so we're back.
From outer space.
Uh-huh, sure. And season four of For All Mankind is here. And we watched Glasnost, episode one. Glasnost, which means openness, restructuring. Restructuring, Perestroika is openness. Glasnost is restructuring, or is it the other way around? Anyway, it's a Gorbachev term. And in the world of For All Mankind, Gorbachev is still in charge into the 2000s. And his reforms and the fact that they won the space race and they're competing in the space race and all that things have continued. So the Soviet Union continues to exist in this world. We learn that. And the episode is called Glasnost. But what might be going on underneath the surface of the Soviet bureaucracy? We don't know, but we get some hints in this episode. But before we talk about what happens in this episode, the big question is, where's the vending machine?
Oh, Jason, did you laugh like I laughed?
I laughed so much. So Daniel Stern is the NASA administrator, and he's in this season. He's big up in the credits, like Daniel Stern. Hobson is the voice of Kevin on the Wonder Years. He's one of the city slickers. He's been around,
and he's playing a character who is. He worked it for like Lee Iacocca or something?
Yeah, he worked at Chrysler because Chrysler didn't get bailed out. There was actually a Chrysler reference in a montage in like an earlier season, but like they instead did electric cars and it was a big success and using technology from the space program, of course, because that's the parallel here. And so he was very successful at Chrysler and he's been tapped by President Gore.
Al made it.
He defeated George H.W. Bush. Interesting. All the parallels. He's been tapped to run NASA and deal with the politics and the budgets and all those things. And we hear all that. And we'll get to the plot. But like the key point is he has a conversation with Alita because she's brought her kid in. And to watch the first people on an asteroid. And Daniel Stern has a conversation where he's like, I saw that your kid is here. I think it's great. They might not appreciate it now, but they're going to remember this moment forever. My dad took me to the factory. And he says, I was more interested in the vending
machine. Vending machine. Yeah.
And I thought, you see us for all mankind.
I want to believe that they have heard our show just a little bit.
Yeah, surely we're not the only fans of For All Mankind who really got into the season two mysteries of the vending machine.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, I'm glad that it's being recognized. I hope for a cameo at some point later in the season.
Either on Earth or could there be a Mars vending machine in Happy Valley?
Sure, why not? Somebody's got to commercialize that sucker, right?
Yeah, right. Or on the moon. I doubt we're going to see a lot on the moon, but it's very clear that the moon is being commercialized. That's part of our big montage. We get our big season opening hilarious montage of how the world has changed. Ellen, so when we left Ellen, she was going to be with Pam, and she's the president of the United States. And what this episode tells us is we see her at the convention in 96, and she is elected, and she's out. So the U.S. has an openly gay president, which leads to her signing the opposite of the Defense of Marriage Act. and then ultimately, when she's not president anymore, she marries Pam. Ellen is not in this season, is my understanding. So they brought Jodie Balfour back for this, I think.
Okay, I thought she might have a cameo or something. It sounded like potentially later. She's not a main cast.
Yeah, this feels like the cameo, but it's possible we'll see her again. But she's not. Yeah, she's not a regular cast member this season. So this might be all the Ellen we get. But they do at least touch base with that. But then she was a Republican though, and George Bush was her running mate. I think H.W. Bush.
Yeah.
And he loses to Gore in the 2000 election. There's an M7 treaty.
Was that vindicating, by the way, for Al Gore? A board member of Apple, it should be noted, though, I'm sure that did not have any direct impact on the story, well, but he finally gets to win that 2000 election.
This show enjoys taking not quite presidents and making them president, they did with Ted Kennedy, too. And so that's some of what's going on here. And Bill Clinton is nowhere to be heard from, but he got a divorce
from Hillary.
M7 treaty in Mars. The idea here is that there are seven nations who have come together and they're jointly operating Happy Valley and Mars. There is a new era of cooperation between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. They're no longer enemies. So this is part of the glasnost of this era. The North Korean, who was the first man on Mars, is celebrated in North Korea. We get that as just part of the montage, but it made me laugh again because that is the single wackiest thing that the show has ever done. And it's got a lot of competition.
I enjoyed, there is a bit, I'm just running through it now. There's a movie about the race to Mars with, I guess, Clint Eastwood playing Ed, and Jada Pinkett playing, I assume, Danielle.
Yep.
I can't tell. They zoom out too fast to figure out who's the third. I can't read the third headliner. It's like super blurry. But I enjoy that. That's fun.
That's really good. Michael Jordan plays baseball, and he, I think, wins the World Series with the Mariners, a team that has never played in the World Series. But Michael Jordan, apparently. Unclear whether he was always playing baseball or whether he retired from basketball and stuck with baseball, which he didn't do when he retired from basketball here. Unclear to me, but I don't care. It's hilarious.
Harvey Weinstein gets basically
caught early
out and caught in 1999.
Yeah. Y2K causes problems in space. You can't make it up. That's so good. They're commercializing the moon. We see there's a slide about Dev and commercial things Dev is up to, and that was one of the things that, I guess this is a spoiler for the rest of the season, but it's in the trailer. Like, Dev's in the trailer, and that was one of those moments of like, oh, I guess we are going to see Dev again. And because he's in this montage, I think
he's in the credits, I think.
Yeah, I would strongly suggest that we will be seeing Dev, right?
Yeah. JFK Jr. is running for the Senate.
Sure. There's a revolution in Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm. We see a bit of Kelly's son is shown, like the Mars baby who was at the end of last season.
Right, who we see in this episode.
And they strap her to a rocket and throw her into space. Everything goes great.
It's okay. It's all fine.
Yeah.
John Lennon performs at the Super Bowl.
Right, because he's still alive.
Because that was an ongoing thing, is that he doesn't die. And then there's a Beatles reunion, and in this one, he's performing at the Super Bowl. There is a trial of the JSC bombers. Because there was a big bomb that killed some key characters last season. The way it's framed, it's very much like the trial of the OKC bombers, the Oklahoma City bombers. I feel like that's the parallel they're drawing there. I mean, and they did that last year. It was a very sort of like Timothy McVeigh-esque thing going on last season, and they leaned into that with this.
Reality TV is big. So we get not only Survivor, but Moon Miners.
Moon Miners. It's like Ice Road Truckers, but it's...
Exactly, but they're on the moon.
Uh-huh. Gorbachev, again, leading a boom in the USSR and the Cold War is over. That's our big montage. Fun stuff, probably important to the plot stuff, and taking us into the 2000s, which is when this season is set.
Wild.
And that means that Ed and Grigori, the Soviet cosmonaut who was the first Soviet on Mars, are wearing lots of old age makeup. They're old. It's old Ed and old Grigori.
They had to age Joel Kinnaman way up. I think even Grigori, neither Grigori or Danielle gets that much.
No, but
they pour it on for Joel Kinnaman. He's got the gray beard and the gray hair. It's not terrible.
It feels like, and I don't know how much of this is makeup, because it also feels like he lost some weight for the part, or lost some weight in general. That's another thing I noticed about him, is he seems a little smaller.
Yeah. He's a big guy. He's like 6'4". Yeah, I don't know. Well,
and
tall.
Usually he's like putting on muscles and stuff. But here, I think I don't know whether it's just him acting small or whether he actually is kind of like he dropped a little weight. He feels
Joel, take it easy this season. You don't have to go to the gym every day.
Don't pump.
Eat a Twinkie.
So they're on an asteroid mission. That's going to be our disaster of the episode. But he's commanding this mission, and Gregory is going to be the first person to stand on an asteroid. But what they're trying to do is lasso an asteroid and take it back to Mars, because the idea here is this is the asteroid mining idea, that there are so many incredibly valuable minerals in floating around in the solar system, and if you have access to them, you can make a lot of money, and that is going to justify, I think, Daniel Stern, who we meet as the NASA administrator, is going to help justify the money they're spending in space, as they got to do stuff like mine asteroids and things like that. And Alita, we see she's working in mission control at the thrust panel.
Seems like she's not where she wants or is we expected her to be, certainly.
Exactly. Like, I think we all expected more of her, and maybe that's intentional. Yeah.
Yeah. She was supposed to, you know, she was Margot's protege, more or less. And perhaps we don't know. So one of our other threads is Margot in Russia, because as some may remember, last season she ended up being sort of blackmailed by the KGB and then gave some information to try to save Sergei. And that really backfired, and then when the bomb went off, she used that opportunity to basically disappear and get out to Russia.
Right.
And she's living an unhappy existence in Russia.
So let's follow. We'll follow Alita's thread, and then we'll follow Margot's thread. So Alita, we see her here. We mentioned she has that conversation where she brought her kid in, and Daniel Stern talks to her and says that he really loved that vending machine at his dad's factory. She has a panic attack while they are dealing with the stressful asteroid issue, which we'll talk about in a little bit. She's having a panic attack, clearly based on the JSC bombing.
Yeah,
right?
The bombing flashbacks and stuff like that.
And then when we see her next, she is working from home, and I got the distinct sense that she was not working from home. She was just not going into work because she's having trouble. She gets a call from NASA. Her husband's taking the kid to school. That's all we get from Alita this time, but clearly there's a lot of issues going on there.
Some tension there.
Yeah, there's which is interesting. I would like to see, as we pointed out, this is a good time to point it out, we did a member special. If you're an Incomparable member, you can go into our First Class feed. We did an episode where we talked about season 1, episode 1. If you're not a member, theincomparable.com/members, you could become a member. There's a lot of stuff you get, including our member special and all past member specials that everybody has ever done, and a Discord, and there's a whole lot of stuff there. Check it out, and you can support us directly. In that episode, we talked about how, you know, her coming across Alita, coming across the border with her family, is, as the moon landing is happening, is a whole like thematic kind of tent pole in the first episode. And so when I think about where she is now, I think, well, it feels like they're saying Alita needs a change. And I wonder what that will be. And I wonder if she's going to end up, is she just going to be more motivated in mission control? It doesn't feel like it. It feels like she's going to go either out into space, or she's going to go, maybe she goes works for Dev. I don't know. I think she's at a point of departure here. She's going to go off and do something different. That's my guess for the season, having not seen any more of it.
Yeah, it is interesting, because I mean, I think we really expected her to sort of take over for Margot, and since whether that's been held back either because, you know, she's having some trauma, you know, PTSD sort of issues, or there's other stuff going on that we don't know about, it does feel like she's struggling a bit to find her place in NASA here. And she has a moment, actually, I thought that was interesting, which is like the where she needs to, like, during the panic attack, she like steps out kind of in an important moment, which I thought was interesting, because she always was very assertive in like stepping in and stuff like that. And even, like, you know, it was very Margot-esque in terms of the way that she used to very like assert her rightness on things. And now she is the one sort of stepping away from things. And I think, yeah, we're going to have to see where her journey takes her in this season.
Right. Because she's obviously, there's something really broken about her. Now, Margot, and I will point out that I don't know about you, I kept looking and thinking, is she walking in front of a green screen? Did they find something that looks like the Soviet Union? And the answer was given to me in the end credits, where a Bulgaria unit is credited.
Mm.
And I thought, okay, there you go. Eastern Bloc.
Yeah, it seemed pretty... I mean, they're not filming in Russia for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But it did seem pretty authentic in terms of the look. It would have been very expensive to have it all on, like, we made up an actual city to look like this and got in all the cars.
Exactly. I was thinking, you know, you could do some of it. Some of it is, it could very well be plates and green screen where she's walking and there's just a little part. But the Bulgaria unit would not surprise me if they actually did go and shoot a bunch of this stuff there, because it there's a lot of it, and it is not all of it can be done just completely using VFX. But there, so I imagine they mounted a Bulgaria unit to do the Soviet Union stuff, which is all Margo stuff. So we get the sense immediately as she wakes up with her, you know. And there's a rap that plays over it in Russian, which is hilarious, as she goes about her day. And it's like, you know, she's not really doing anything. She sort of gets up and like goes and gets stuff at the bakery. There are Russians at the newsstand complaining about Gorbachev, which is, I thought, really nice, where he's like, this Gorbachev, he needs to do more for us. And the other guy is like, you don't remember what it was like before? It was real bad. Like, we got more than one newspaper now, he says, which I thought was very funny, that the news agent is like, there are more, it's not just Pravda now, right? Like, things are better now, but of course people complain.
And I want to give full credit to Ren Schmidt here, who does, I mean, I took 4 years of Russian in high school. It's pretty weak, but full credit to her for doing the terrible Russian accent with her Southern accent, because she's already putting on the Southern accent. That's not her normal speaking voice. And she's doing the Russian accent on top of that, and it's very bad. It's very bad. And I thought it's very Margot, right? It's very Margot. It's like, all right, I gotta learn language because I gotta get by, but I'm not gonna like spend a lot of time to like figure out how to sound like a Russian.
She knows the words.
But I'm gonna like plow through it. Okay. Yeah,
I recognize the words, and I also recognize that she is, you know, she's just an American giving those Yanni Penny Mayu. She's frozen out though. We now realize she wants to talk to the director of Roscosmos, the Russian space agency. They don't want to talk to her. She takes a very long bus ride to go see the director and goes into the building, and a guy who I wrote down speaks many languages, including English, comes out and gives her the rough truth, which is, what can you provide that we are not better equipped to handle? You've been out of the game for 10 years. And her response is, well, in your case, everything. Burn. And he's like, don't come back here unannounced ever again. And a man gets, you know, basically shows her out. And then next time we see her, it's like Groundhog Day, right? She gets up, looks out the window, which is the shot from last season at the very end where we see that she's in Russia. And she goes, as she goes to a park and sits on a park bench, Dan, did you have that moment where it's like you don't sit on a park bench in the Soviet Union unless there's going to be some spycraft afoot?
Oh, yeah. Especially if there's like pigeons to feed or something like that. Like, this is all set up. And yeah, the minute the lady starts talking to her and I'm like, oh, what is like...
Right?
I think the question is like, it's like which of the many interests is this?
Well,
and
right.
What is their angle?
Yeah, that part's mysterious. But at a moment, I also flashed to what is it? In 2010, there's a scene where the Russian and the American have that conversation in the park in Washington, D.C. that they can't. It's like they can't talk about it officially, but they're going to talk about it.
Oh, you need the back channels.
It's that classic and spies and Cold War stuff. It's all that. So yeah, Margot, this woman is there feeding the birds. Of course she is. And they are patient birds, she says. They have to wait for the flowers to bloom. It is winter now, Miss Madison, but soon it will be spring. You must be patient. You have friends here. And she leaves behind a bird seed and a card with just a phone number on it and walks away. And so that's all we know about Margot, but like, intrigue, something is afoot. She's frozen out of Roscosmos, but somebody's doing something. Somebody's up to something. Fascinating.
Yeah, I enjoy having that angle in this. You know, you can't deal with Russia under the Soviet Union and not talk about essentially the intelligence apparatus, because it's such a, even under Gorbachev and, you know, Glasnost and Perestroika, it is such a force.
Right.
And we see she's still impacting politics today in the real world.
Yeah, she sees when she leaves, when we first see her and she leaves her flat.
She's got a minder.
There's a car across the street that is the guy who watches her. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, the big question for me about her is, like, does anybody in America know that she's still alive? Like, does the CIA know she's still alive?
Oh, right.
Does anybody?
Because she was spirited out under the cover of the bombing.
Right. So presumably they may have never found a body,
right,
which might hint to them that she's gone. But who knows? You might think something really bad. Well, like, cause her office gets like totally destroyed, basically. So.
I guess what I would say is she's wandering around the streets and goes to the headquarters of Roscosmos and apparently has a regular, you know, every other week
or whatever meeting. Yeah.
So I would have a hard time believing that at least the American intelligence service doesn't know that she's alive, even if nobody else does. But it's a good question. Like, and where is she going to? I think what's really interesting here is we've been sold the idea that the Cold War is over, and maybe it is, maybe it's not. I don't know, right? But we also have like their dev is out there, and like are there other forces at work here that are not? I mean, are they going to do something in the Soviet government? Is there going to be a thing where something happens with Roscosmos, or is this outside of
internal,
that, right?
Yeah, or
this is some, is this some other entity? We don't know at all, but I like it. I like the intrigue about it, and I was wondering what the hell they were going to do with Margo.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by it, and I think, frankly, it seems... it's a plot that I'm really interested in. It's spy, Cold War spy stuff.
You don't suppose they would end up putting like Dev and Alita and Margo together, putting Alita back with Margo? Oh boy.
Boy. After last season's revelations and Margo or Alita figuring out that Margo had basically sold them out.
Yeah.
I think that would be real tense.
Might be interesting. I don't know. Okay, we meet a new character. It's Miles. He's just a guy. He's
down on his luck.
He's having trouble. He's working at a garage or something. He's got like a shirt with a name tag on it. He comes back to, I guess maybe where he used to live or it's his wife's dad's house, and she's living there now.
Yeah, separated from his wife at the very least.
She wants him to sign the papers, but he doesn't want to sign the papers. The classic shorthand for the husband who can't let go. He tells her he's got an interview. It's also clear that she's not super committed even from the beginning in the separation because, you know, or she's at least humoring him because she's like, look, your shirt's wrinkly. When she finds the shirt, he can't find it. She immediately finds it, which is funny. But again, it's like a trope, but like, that's what they're doing here is they're like giving you the shorthand of what the deal is with this guy. And she's like, no, it's wrinkled. I'll iron it for you. So he can go because he's heard you can get, because he was an oil rig worker, which they all lost their jobs because of the, I don't know, electric and fusion
or
whatever revolution.
The energy revolution.
Yeah, exactly. But they're hiring oil workers to work mining on the moon. And she basically says, don't get your hopes up. And then he goes to the HR for the mine company, and it is full of people, and he's just told to fill out a form. He lies about his education, says he has a college education, but he tells the story about the rigs closing down.
And he's got a recommendation from another guy who is working on the moon.
On the moon, right?
The moon, yeah.
And so the guy, after quizzing him about Florida State, which was a good moment, right? I was like, what dorm were you in? What dorm wasn't I in? Yeah, but you know, in Tallahassee. I know the name of the city where the college is, but no other details about it. Yeah, all right.
Go team that plays there.
Go Noles, he says. So, he says, okay, great. This law looks pretty good. We can get you a posting in the moon in 2 years. And the guy's like, I don't have 2 years. Don't you see that my separated wife ironed this shirt for me? I'm desperate, right? Like, I'm desperate. I'm a desperate man. And there's the bonding, fake bonding about Florida State or whatever. He's like, I could squeeze you on a Mars crew, but it's a 2-year commitment.
Right.
And it's like, oh, what's he going to do? So he goes and tells his wife this, and she says, you know, those people who died have families. We'll get to the people who died in a minute. it's for all mankind. People died. They had families. Don't go. And he's like, it's going to be okay, I promise. And they kiss, and she says, this doesn't mean we're getting back together. And I'm thinking to myself, you're the mother of his child, and he's going to be gone for 2 years. So, I mean, yes and no and yeah. yes, whatever. Yeah. But he's, and then when we next see him, there's a shot at the end with Danielle, who we'll get to in a minute. And we pan down the ship that's clearly bound for Mars, and our buddy Miles is in it. So off to Mars goes our regular guy.
In coach, though.
Yeah. He's in the back of the plane.
Danielle's flying business class. Or first class or something, yeah.
But he's, yeah, he's in the back of the plane. But it's, you know, so new character, new thread, which is average Joe goes to Mars. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm interested in that. I think it's kind of intriguing to throw in another character. And we know, I think this is part of the interesting moving pieces of For All Mankind, is that since the show makes such big time jumps between the seasons, and we age our cast up as we go, you need to add more characters. Like, we can't just be following all the 60-year-olds,
right, who were exactly.
the space guys back in the 60s. So having Aleta and having Miles, you know, gives us an entry point for some characters who have a different perspective and are a different generation too, right? Like, that provides interesting tension and interesting, you know, little conflicts between these characters who have different backgrounds, right? Because now that space, Mars and the moon and stuff does have, it's not just for astronauts, right? Like, we get this sort of different perspective, which I think is pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. It's necessary. And I like the idea that part of the progression here is that a regular guy like Miles could go to Mars. And what is right. that experience yeah. like? It's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, Danielle. Mentioned Danielle. When we first see her, she's at a birthday party, and I'm like, who are these people? And then I remember, oh, this is the wife.
It's Danny's wife.
Of creepy Danny Stevens.
Whose existence I was thinking about during this. We are not told.
Okay, so.
What happened to Danny Stevens.
So, here's the funny thing. And yeah, we are not told. So, when we last left Danny Stevens, they decided to exile him at the North Korean guy's capsule, basically, and make him live there on his own. And later, in Danielle's thread here, when she's talking to Hobson, he says, you know, that was a real hard time out there with Danny and all of that. She's like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, are they talking about the bad stuff with Danny? Or as Lauren put it, as we were watching, she's like, oh yeah, he's the guy who like took all the drugs and screwed everything up and killed people. And I'm like, yep, that's him.
Yeah.
But is that what he's talking about? Or did something worse happen with Danny yep. and we're not privy to it yet? I feel like there's
a shoe to drop there, because like the options are like, well, we just left him there for the next.
And there are pictures of him with his kid and his wife yes. in his wife's house, which makes sense, right? He's the father at least. But like yeah. it implies a little bit that he's not around. Now, he could be in like, they could have yeah. flown him back to Mars or back to Earth and put him in jail. Or they could have just, right. or he could have died out there.
I
don't know.
There's a lot of the like, it's kind of the code, right? Like, they have the whole code of like, well, we're not going to like rat him out really. Like, even though he did this terrible stuff, like, we're going to take matters into our own hands and deal with him. And maybe the problem will solve itself because we're all stuck on Mars for yeah. this, whatever it ends up being, like a year or something. Because, like,
know,
how
man.
Do you deal with the logistics of that? I don't know. Do you bring
spend,
him home?
Do you spend the effort to bring him home? I suppose it's probably a net expansion. There are probably more seats going back than there are coming out, because you're probably
right,
increasing the population.
But we don't even know how much the people on Mars told the people back home what happened.
Presumably
right?
they did report back eventually, but we don't really know. I don't know. It's a real interesting question. I imagine they're going to deal with it at some point, but like it's making me wonder. Danielle then hears about the death of Gregory, which we'll talk about last. She gets called in to Johnson Space Center to meet with Daniel Stern, who says, with this asteroid mess, Peters, who is the boss at Happy Valley on Mars, is out. We want you. And she's like, I'm not even in NASA. And then he gives her the guilt trip, which I really appreciate, where he's like, oh, but if you don't go, the president might cancel the whole thing. You have to go. And she's like, I'm not really interested. And then he's like, well, yeah, but I've asked you before and you haven't even come. And then you came this time. And she's like, look, Gregory was my friend. Ed was, that time was messy. Ed was a wreck after what happened to Karen. He was my rock. So it's like in the moments we didn't see after all the disastrous things that happened there. I'm here because of him. And Daniel Stern's like, we got to get this back on track. What can I do to get you in this car today, basically? And
what can I do to get you on this assembly line?
And so she's at JSC, right? So she's walking the halls. No shots of a vending machine, unfortunately. But Will Tyler is there. We get a little update from him where I had that moment of like, oh, right, he's the kid who came out
on Mars.
And they're like, do we drum him out of the military? Because he's already on Mars. And there was a whole don't ask, don't tell kind of references going on there. And he's like, hey, I'm getting married. I work in the astronaut office. Yay. And I don't know if we'll see him again or not, but it was like a nice season 3 check-in with a character we remember or should remember, and I eventually remembered. But it's like, so he's there to kind of say, like, yeah, things are going great here. I know it might be hard. And this is that moment, Dan. This is it. It's like, I know it's hard heading back up there after everything that happened with Danny. And I'm like, oh man, everything that happened with Danny covers a lot. Does it cover more than I know? Oh, I bet it does. I bet it does.
I bet there's more.
Anyway, he says, in maybe my favorite line of dialogue in the whole thing, because he knows she's thinking of going to Mars. And Will Tyler says, well, see her around, or maybe not.
Yeah, I like that actor. I'm glad that they brought him back in there. I mean, he's...
Maybe we'll see him some more. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he'll show up some more. We don't know.
He's in the astronaut office, so he may be one of the characters that we see at JSC. We don't know how the season is going to go. So anyway, cut to, she's on the Unity that is using the new... We get it in the montage, right? There's new technology that you can get to Mars a lot faster, and you don't have to do it in the 2-year window. So they're able to go sort of like whenever to Mars, which is real convenient. They're, you know...
Right. We have our science fiction-y...
Yeah.
Amazing.
It can go so fast that you don't have to wait until Mars is close to Earth. You could just kind of go anytime, and it's so fast. And yay, hooray. It solves the issue of having people spend 6 months in a spaceship to get to Mars when you have things happening in Mars. Right. So makes sense. That's Danielle. So Danielle is, I mean, again, one of our characters who's been around since the beginning and really kind of blossomed as the seasons have gone along. And now we're going to get, obviously, she's being thrown into whatever mess the show is cooking up on Mars this season. But I enjoyed the, you know, I thought I was out and you pulled me back in. They didn't have to try too hard, but clearly she decided, all right, I'll go back out there. And again, like Alita, a character who's kind of damaged by the bad stuff that happened last season. And that's an interesting little twist for Danielle.
Yeah. No, they haven't aged her up as aggressively as Ed.
Right.
So I feel like it's not crazy to have her go back into mission. Whereas I'd be looking at Ed. Ed also, you know, we haven't talked that much about him yet, but like he won't come home, which I think is fair.
Yeah. We'll get into that part. So Danielle, I really like the character. I think she's one of the great, good character to root for people in the show. Because not a lot of the characters are like, this is an interesting character, but I don't know if I can root for them or not. But Danielle, I am always rooting for. Like, Danielle is great. She's very good at her job. She pits up with a lot of crap. Here she goes again. So, yeah, here she goes again. Okay, asteroids stuff. So
asteroids. It's not just a video game anymore.
It's Ed and Gregory, and we talked about it. They're lassoing an asteroid. They're building a tower on the asteroid with the cables all around it so that they can grab onto this thing and then tow it back to Mars. We also see Kelly, who is back home with her kid. This is one of those reminders of, like, remember Ed's daughter Kelly, Ed and Karen's daughter Kelly. Karen died in the explosion. She and this was the quick catch up that Lauren and I had, where I'm like, yeah, she had sex with the cute cosmonaut, and then he sadly died in the landslide. Yep. And she was pregnant and they had to blast her off of Mars in order to get her home. Well, she's now home with her cosmonaut boyfriend's mom.
Love the mom.
Yeah, and in the later scene, we can jump ahead. There's a later scene where she's talking to Ed or getting messages back from Ed because it's all the way on Mars. And Olga, the mom, has an outburst. Was like, he's not coming back. I'm not holding my tongue anymore. He keeps saying he will come back. He will never come back. And there's that, like, he said he'd come back in 97 and 98 and 2000, and he does not come back. He is not coming back because he's like, I'm not coming back this time, but I'll be back again soon. And so it's like Ed is just doesn't want to come back to Earth, I guess. By the way, Dan, it's time for one of my favorite segments, which is what Apple technology are our people using? It's a tablet in the early 2000s and very nicely done. It has brushed metal with aqua buttons.
Yeah, I love the QuickTime appearance here. Mm-hmm. That made me so excited. It seems to be I kind of zoomed in a little bit. I think it's still technically a Newton. Like it's a message pad, I want to say.
But it's thick. It's like
they kept making the Newton, they would have made a bigger one.
It's a proto iPad is basically what it is. It's got Mac kind of features on it, but it's an Apple TV show. It's made by people who are Apple nerds. They put in these nods to Apple technologies, and brush metal. It's great. And those aqua buttons.
That's good.
So good.
It was very nostalgic for me.
What says 2000?
Almost anything else. Yeah.
Exactly. So check in with Kelly. I don't know if we're going to get a lot with Kelly or not. We'll see. She's got a kid. She's got Grandma Olga there. Poor Kelly. Yeah. Her mom's dead. Her boyfriend died.
Lives in space.
Her dad won't come home from space. And, you know, she's got her mother-in-law. And then I think to myself, she could just go back to Mars, but she'd have to bring the kid. And if we've learned anything from Rocket Man is that Mars ain't the kind of place to raise a kid.
it definitely seems on the rough side in general, so I don't feel like it is. I don't think they would be on board with, like, I'm just going to bring a child.
No, you shouldn't do it. And there's no one there to raise them if you did. So the asteroid goes badly. And this is the most For All Mankind thing that could possibly happen in this episode, right? I mean, you knew it, right? Like, the cables fray, and you're like, well, it's just the cables. And then suddenly Grigory's like, I must go back out there. And I'm like, don't go out there. And then rando dude is like, I'll go out there too. And the woman who is like his partner on the ship is like, what are you doing? He's like, nope, I'm going to be a hero or whatever. And she's like, you're a moron. And at this moment, I'm thinking these guys are dead. And indeed, they go out there, but things are really bad, and a whole truss comes apart, and there's a big thing that pivots around, and he's like, move, move, and Parker, the random dude, does not move and is basically impaled by a big piece of space junk, which is, you know, it's For All Mankind, folks. People are going to die horribly from things in space. That's how it works. Grigory gets off lightly. He has a punctured suit, and his leg is stuck, and so he gets to talk to Ed and say goodbye and say, you have to leave me here. I can't get out, and I'm running out of oxygen anyway. And he's also noticing that the whole ship is like pivoting over toward the asteroid and is going to smash into it. And he's like, you got to go. And they uncouple and say goodbye, which is nice, but still, it is a disaster. And the last shot of the episode is Ed kind of looking out the window, smoking his, I don't know, is it pot? Is it just a rolled up cigarette? I don't know what it is. But like, again, it's For All Mankind. There's some people smoking things in space. It's a bad idea. It's a real bad idea. Yeah. But okay.
I love there was a little homage there to Tracy.
To Tracy.
Because he blows it into the vent.
Into the air vent. He's holding it by the air vent. Yeah, exactly. It is. It is an homage to good old Tracy. So that's episode one. Like, bad. I enjoyed the asteroid disaster because, I mean, how do you watch the show and not? You got to enjoy the space disasters when they come.
Oh, yeah.
Or why are you watching the show?
Yeah, that was the moment where you're like, oh, we're towing an asteroid. It's like, yeah, it's not going to go well. They just tow it back to Mars and everything is fine.
But not the first time, right? You're like, exactly. Maybe they'll do it eventually, right? Maybe.
Yeah, but stuff's going to go badly first.
Surely some people are going to die along the way, and they do. And it was nice to, you know, I think from a logistical standpoint, they're like, we want the guy who is Grigory back. You know, he's like, we don't want you for the season. Maybe he didn't want to come back for the season, but it's like, we don't want you for the season, but we want you for the premiere. And he's like, great. So he gets his episode, and then he's gone. They kill him off. But I always hate it when shows like kill characters off entirely off screen. It's kind of nice that he gets his bow here. He gets his final. He didn't get to be in the whole season, but
I love the rapport between him and Ed is great, right? Like, you know,
think how far we've come.
Exactly. A decade on, and like, it's just fun to see these two old, like, cranky guys who have been through a lot together and just, you know, kind of rib each other. Cause it's like they're kind of, you get the impression they're all the other one really has. I mean, he mentions at the end, like, tell my wife and family or whatever, but like, you know, he is the Russian Ed, right?
Yes,
you get
he's
the feeling
also
he's
been
probably
out there
been up there the whole time.
Yeah.
So I think that it's kind of nice to see how we've moved past that. And I like it shows once again how this show continues to evolve every season and take, you know, because they get these time jumps between the season, you can extrapolate stuff that happened off screen. And, you know, they allude to details here and there, and we'll go back and probably fill in some of those details as we go. But it's also nice to see the characters sort of have these long-term developments between them.
Yeah, for sure. One of the richnesses of For All Mankind. And yes, you do have to put up sometimes. Some people, it bothers more than others. It doesn't really bother me. With the old age makeup or the plausibility that this is the same person you saw in the early 70s and now it's the 2000s and they look pretty much the same. I know, but look, the ambition of the show requires that they do this sort of thing. And what you get is the richness of the backstory of these characters over decades. And, you know, when she says, Kuznetsov Grigory was my friend, Ed was a wreck, Kuz was my rock, I'm here because of him, Danielle says that. Well, Danielle's being sent back out there where Ed is, and it's like, well, what's the Danielle Ed relationship like? I mean, hi Bob, right? It goes back a long way.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of was looking forward to that moment because they are, I'm sure there's some tense stuff there, but I appreciate that it's, again, there's so much informed by three seasons and 30 years of these characters knowing each other. So, yeah, there's a lot of rich stuff there.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, onward, season four.
Onward to season four. Maybe there will be a vending machine.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, I feel like, I feel pretty good. We got vending machine shout out in this episode. So I'm if we don't get more, but I will keep watching to see if there's some sort of, you know, items being vended on Mars or on Earth or on the moon. As long as there's vending happening somewhere or people acknowledge that vending exists, that's the most important thing, I think.
Yeah. We just all want to vend together.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
It's how it brings us all together.
Maybe where all the moon miners and Mars miners go, there'll be
a
company store and a vending machine, right?
Maybe so. Yeah. Maybe so. All right, we'll be back with more. Remember, our member special is in the feed. If you're an Incomparable member, check it out. At the end of that episode, we shout you out as coming from the future to listen. So if you haven't listened yet, check it out and hear that shout out, which for us is in the past, but for you is in the future, but you're also in the future. I'm glad there's no time travel in For All Mankind is what I'm saying, really. They do time travel. They just go forward, though.
It's only forward.
Like the decades rest of us. To decade. Like the rest
Although
of us.
Although a little faster.
They do. Way faster. Thank goodness. All right. Great talking with you about For All Mankind again, Dan.
You too. It's good to be back. I'm looking forward to the season.
Yay. Hooray. All right. We'll see you all next time. Bye.
Bye.